Inclusion Now 54, Disability History Month, Leadership, Culture and Resistance. Disability History Month 2019 is nearly upon us. Our theme is Disability, Leadership, Culture and Resistance. We hope more and more schools, colleges, community groups and workplaces will learn about the transformation of thinking about disability, which heralded fundamental positive changes in disabled people's lives in the 80s and 90s. Unfortunately, we have gone into reverse since 2000 with marketisation and austerity. Over the last 150 years, the radical history of disabled people, leading to improvements in the conditions of our existence, has been shaped by handfuls of individual disabled people, their thinking and movements which challenged the status quo. Ben Peirce was a blind piano tuner who had trained at Henshaw's Blind Asylum, Old Trafford. Peirce was born in 1874 and had lost his sight completely by the age of 13. After failing to get work for 2 years, he formed a radical organisation of only blind and partially sighted people. The newly formed National League of the Blind, 1899, argued for entitlement to direct state aid and abolition of all charities. Peirce was a strong advocate of self-representation and parliamentary and direct action, arguing a trade union was required to represent workers who were being exploited both in private industry and in the charity sector. The NLB joined the TUC in 1902, and the Labour Party at its first conference in 1906, which endorsed the NLB policies, including adequate education and training for blind students in mainstream institutions. In 1920, the NLB organised 3 marches on Parliament from the South West and Wales, Newcastle and Manchester, to converge on London for a guaranteed minimum wage. They organised many strikes, one for 6 months in Bristol in 1912. Organisations such as the NLB and its influence in the TUC and Labour Party helped frame the Beveridge Report and the creation of the welfare state. The introduction of the welfare state ironically led to increased segregation for disabled people in long-stay mental deficiency hospitals, asylums and care homes, and a rapid growth of segregated education. The 1944 Act was based on selection by ability for grammar, secondary, modern and technical schools, and increased selection for disability with 14 new categories of special schools. This was matched by growth and professionalisation of special educators and rehabilitation professionals. A very useful and readable resource is No Limits by Judy Hunt, 2019, which recounts the historical transformations for physically disabled people from institutional care to independent living. Being married to Paul Hunt, one of the pioneers of the disabled people's movement, Judy can draw on Paul's journal and papers, and has interviewed the dwindling number of Paul's contemporaries. In the 1950s, those with significant physical impairments were placed in hospital wards for the chronically sick and elderly, as there were too many obstacles to them living their life in the community. The root cause of the problem was seen as their impairment, but Paul came to think the social and physical barriers to integration were the key problem. These barriers were underlain by deep and age-old prejudices, oppressive attitudes and thinking. Lee Court was set up by Leonard Cheshire as his first alternative home for the disabled. There was an easygoing attitude, with residents fairly free to pursue their interests and relationships. There was a democratic residence committee, controlling a publication, Cheshire Smile, and a filmmaking unit. However, as local authorities paid for places at the growing number of these homes, they increasingly exerted pressure for medicalisation and stricter management with petty rules. At Lee Court, Paul and the other residents resisted these pressures collectively over a long period, even being threatened with expulsion back to hospital. Out of these many local struggles, Paul and others produced the important book, Stigma, The Experience of Disability, 1966, analysing their experiences and arguing for a different approach to the medical model, self-representation and control of their lives. In 1972, Paul, having married Judy and moved to his own adapted home in London, wrote a letter to The Guardian which led to the formation of the Union of the Physically Impaired Against Segregation, UPIAS. I am proposing the formation of a consumer group to put forward nationally the views of actual and potential residents of these successors to the workhouse. We hope in particular to formulate and publicise plans for alternative kinds of care. Paul and Judy met Vic Finkelstein and his wife and ideas cross-fertilised. Vic had been imprisoned in South Africa for anti-apartheid activity after he was paralysed. Vic was one of the key thinkers who developed the idea of disability as a social oppression and posited the social model. This thinking took much from the struggle for race equality in South Africa. UPIAS went on to recruit disability activists from across the UK and formulated the fundamental principles of disability. This led to the British Council of Disabled People and the formation of Disabled People International, in which Finkelstein played a key part. In our view, it is society which disables physically impaired people. Disability is something imposed on top of our impairments. By the way, we are unnecessarily isolated and excluded from full participation in society. Disabled people are therefore an oppressed group in society. It follows from this analysis that having low incomes, for example, is only one aspect of our oppression. It is a consequence of our isolation and segregation in every area of life, such as education, work, mobility, housing, etc. Ken and Maggie Davis, two leading members of UPIAS, pioneered independent living, commissioning their own housing scheme in Sutton-in-Ashfield. After 4 years, including buying the land, working with architects and bringing in adapted fittings from Sweden, they moved in 1976. The Disability Liberation Network was influenced by the women's movement. Following their initial meeting at Lower Shore Farm outside Swindon in 1980, they focused more on breaking down isolation by finding ways to communicate with each other, whether deaf, blind or physically impaired. Many ideas that were developed by Micheline Mason and others in their In From the Cold magazine helped later form the Alliance for Inclusive Education. Work on self-representation, social model and disability as oppression were brought together to transform education at a founding conference of the Integration Alliance in 1990. Some principles of the Disability Liberation Network were to abolish all forms of segregation, particularly in education settings and residential institutions, to seek allies amongst able-bodied people, i.e. people who will help us fight for ourselves, not on our behalf, to seek complete self-determination and control over our representation in the media, and to have control over information put out about us, to encourage people with disabilities to organise into active groups around achieving their rights at international, national and local levels, to make allies of and be allies to all oppressed groups. Our movement needs more than ever to go back to these insights, to find new ways of struggling for inclusive education and equality. On paper and in law we have made progress, but our experience of the deeply ingrained oppression towards all disabled people requires us to be directly and collectively involved in the transformation of society and the world. We can make a start by challenging the growth of exclusions and special free schools being promoted by the government. References at https://bit.ly/32ginzb. Resources at www.ukdhm.org. Richard Reeser, World of Inclusion.